How did you guys celebrate, if you can say in
we
a public
went
forum?
To Waffle House.
You never know.
Ate Waffle House.
Hell yeah.
Oh, yes.
We witnessed the fight.
IMSA Pit Crew member Jacob Stauffenberger joins our podcast this week on Flag Time. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Flag Time Podcast, the automotive service podcast, where we talk a lot about not that. Today's episode is going to be a really cool one because I have a former classmate that went at NASCAR Tech at the same time as me, who is now an IMSA team member. Say hello to Jacob Stauffenberger.
What's up, everybody?
Go ahead and introduce yourself.
I'm Jacob. I work for United Autosports, rear tire changer, also a body tech. Yeah, I've been doing IMSA now for 7 years. Sounds about right. Yeah. It's been quite the experience, you could say. Quite the experience.
I absolutely love IMSA. So endurance racing is like, don't get me wrong, Formula One has my heart. Like that's undeniable, non-negotiable. But the endurance racing in both WEC and IMSA is fucking spectacular. And I am stupid excited to hear what it's like from the technician's point of view, especially because like I've walked around the paddock, sadly only at Long Beach, which I know you guys, LMP2 is not doing Long Beach this year, correct?
Correct. Yeah. That is correct.
But yeah, I'm so excited. I have so many questions. Someone let me know if I should just like start popping off or we should start with like, how did you get where you are now? Like that might be better.
Yeah, I figured that would be the best first question to start off with. So
yeah.
I like it. It's a good first question. It's actually a question that I get a lot is like how, like, where did you start? Like, how did you get there? I get asked that so many times at the track. And like, what I tell everybody is I found a school and I'd actually heard about the school, you know, earlier in the 2000s, going to, you know, following NASCAR and stuff. So, you know, I kind of decided that I wanted to go to race and do that. Like, I just wanted to go figure that out. So I applied to the school and got in, and it was about 6 months after I applied, I think I finally moved and started school about 2 weeks later. So, and did the whole school program, did the automotive program that was 48 weeks long, I believe. Mm-hmm. Does that sound correct? Yep. Okay. Yep. And then after finishing that, I added on the NASCAR portion that was offered by the school. And in that, you know, they teach you like basic setup, they teach you fabrication, welding, and how to work with metal and how to work with stuff like that. And then they also do like a pit course, so you have 3 weeks of learning how to do pit stops. And at that time, which maybe it is still even 5 lugs, so you get to learn how to like pit plug nugs 5 times, and that gets full speed and people going around the car and doing stuff. So it's a good like beginner, if you want to say, and it looks good. So I kind of did that, and then about 3 weeks after I graduated, the school actually sends out resumes to teams and stuff that are looking for in the area for new hirees, and I got an email from my boss, and went and had an interview, and about a week later after that, I started working for him, and I've been with him ever since, so I've been working with the same boss.
It's been pretty great.
Oh.
It's cool. NASCAR Technical Institute, by the way. It is what he was talking about.
Yes,
same school that I went to.
Amazing. What was like part of UCI, day one, shift one?
Mm-hmm. Day one, shift one. So it's kind of crazy to think about, like, especially the shop that I started at. We've progressed a lot in the last 7 years that I've been there. And so like day one, shift one, I remember walking in, and all the cool cars that I'd seen there. We had a Ryan Newman 12 all-tail car, had a 45 Wells Fargo Kyle Petty car. It was a show car, but you know, it still was dressed up ready to race. Like,
yeah, probably worth mentioning that Zach Brown is one of the co-owners of United Autosports.
Yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
So
definitely
plenty of cool cars to go around.
Definitely. there was all sorts of cool stuff. Like, and when we started then, like, it was just a small BMW. Like, we just did club racing, little stuff like that. We had dabbled into, like, the AER, which is American Endurance Racing. And when I just got there, they just got their first P3, which is LMP3 prototype. And they were looking into doing the race at Virginia International Raceway. And so they were a no-name team that showed up with no livery on the car, no nothing, just a couple drivers, and actually almost podiumed the first time that they were out there. And so when they got back, like, we all, like, I didn't go to the first event. I had just started, so I watched it on TV. But there was a cool, there was a good atmosphere in the building after they came back, that, like, everybody kind of knew that, like, they could do it, you know what I mean? So, and then from then on, it just kind of progressed. We did the P3s for a couple years, and we had a really good success in that. And then we, United came over, and we started all the P2 business. And so we've been running with them ever since. It's been great.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, oh. Okay. I'll take over the podcast entirely, just a little bit longer.
Okay.
I have to know.
All right, go for it.
I think every technician, everyone who has ever even just held an impact gun would desperately like to know if the wheel guns are as just fun as fuck to wield. Because the pit crew guns are something else.
I wish, like, and it's crazy the science that, like, you can break down to the pit crew guns. Like in Formula One, obviously, like, the guns they use are, like, even more advanced than the guns that we use. But the guns that we use now are a little bit better than the guns that I used in the P3 world, too. So it's, like, the business behind the guns is incredible, like, what they do. And, yeah, I'll tell you what, it's fun to pull the trigger on those things and rip a wheel nut off of the car and then put one right back on, because, like, it's hard to imagine, like, exactly how much torque it's putting into the wheel until you go with a regular impact and try to take that wheel nut off. And then you realize, like, man, I only held the trigger for a second and then put it on this tight. Like, you know, it's crazy. It's so much fun. It's so much fun. Hearing it go off into your ear, it's awesome.
So you're saying it's definitely stronger than my Milwaukee half inch electric impact times.
We use those ones. Oh, well, maybe do you have the big, like, the big Milwaukee one with, like, the big battery, like 20 volt, or, like, the OG?
I literally just put my toolbox onto a trailer and had it moved this morning, and I should fucking know. It's whatever the big one that, like, comes with, like, with the leaf blower.
Yeah, does it have that, like, one settings on the inside that you can, like, change the settings? It's like one,
yeah,
two, three,
it's not
and four.
The it's not the newest one with the lights on the front. It's the one, I don't know, I bought off a fucking tool truck for, like, $700 or whatever.
Yeah, all right, yeah. We use those ones on pit road all the time. And so, like, those ones, you try to take off one of the impacts, and you're sitting there holding the trigger for at least 30 seconds before it starts to budget. Like, it's crazy. Damn, the amount of power behind it. Like,
what the heck is a torque spec on a race car wheel? Like, what the hell?
A lot.
Oh my god.
More than a Honda Civic?
Yeah. Doesn't your pit gun still spin at, like, 10,000 RPM, or is it faster?
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably about 10 grand. I couldn't tell you exactly what it's at, but it's fast. When it grabs, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, because I remember I remember the teachers of the pit crew class at NASCAR Tech talking about how, like, the actual guns that they use in Cup are spinning, like, 10 to 12K to get those lug nuts off and back on again. So it's insane how much power they're putting out.
That's fucking awesome. Crazy.
It is crazy.
That is wild.
Crazy. I was crazy once. Something in a room.
A rubber room.
Rubber room with rats.
I was
rats
an adventurer like you once.
Crazy. Oh, no.
Then I took an arrow to me.
Yeah.
I remember that.
That was awesome.
What a great line. At
the time. God.
Flag Time will be right back after this word from our sponsor.
This episode of Flag Time is brought to you by the generous members of the Flag Time Patreon. The Flag Time Patreon is home to the video versions of all of our new episodes and exclusive content for select tiers. Starting at $3 a month, you gain access to every new episode of this podcast and every episode released before you signed up, which is a lot by now, probably. $6 a month is our bonus content tier, which gets you exclusive clips and other creations by our editor. It also grants you access to the Flag Time Discord, where we record all of our episodes. And finally, $15 a month gets you a specific listener interaction segment that guarantees your opinion or question will be shared to the ether of the podcast airwaves. We also say your name at the end of every episode, which is fun if you have a name like Poop Butt 14 or something. So if you want to support us in whatever way you can and want more of our dumb shit, subscribe today. The more of you that do, the less the flat rate system gets to fuck me in the ass. The Flag Time Patreon. Subscribe today to see. Stealth Industries has partnered with me, Serrated Mobius, to bring you Speege and Flag Time patches. Now available over at stealthx.us. That's STEALTHX.US under the Serrated Mobius collection. Go get yours now. We're back to this episode of Flag Time.
Yeah, when I'm watching motorsports, as a technician, one of the most heartbreaking things to me is when a pit stop goes wrong. I just can't imagine being the wheelman who can't, like, who misses, or the car drives off and then the the next camera shot.
That's my biggest fear.
Is the wheel absolute rolling by. Yep. Have you had any moments like that? Have you borne witness to them?
Thankfully, I've never lost a wheel. I've witnessed other cars losing wheels. Like the Acura lost a wheel in the 24 this year, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Luckily, knock on wood, you know, I've never had to worry about losing a wheel. I've definitely had pit stops go wrong, though. I've had plenty of pit stops go wrong where either there's a hiccup in the front, so your guy is kind of running late with your tire, or, you know, they're checking over damage, or, like, really one that comes to mind, if you don't mind me sharing the story, was Rolex 24. It was my first one that I ever did. Unfortunately, the sister car had just got into an accident, so they were out of the race. I remember my buddy came up and was like, hey, we're putting the spare gun underneath the fuel rig right now, so if you guys need it, it's there. I was like, all right, thanks. So, no kidding, next pit stop, I change the inside wheel and go out to the outside wheel. And when I go out to the outside wheel, I go to hit the gun, and the gun makes a sound that I had not heard before. Kind of sounded like it was it was like halfway. It sounded like it was halfway in between switches, like all the air was coming out of it. So, you know, I'm hitting the gun, I'm making sure everything's good and all, and I realize, like, nothing's happening. So, you know, I get up. I wave to the boys, hey, like, gun failure. I run over to the wall to go grab a spare gun, and there's no spare gun ready or attached on the wall.
Awesome.
So now everyone's like, well, where's the spare gun at? And I'm like, well, it's over in the fuel rig. Like, you got to go get it in the fuel rig. So they go and they dig out the gun, and I rip off the tape. We hook it up. We get it attached. Everything's good, you think? So I go back over to finish the stop, and I go rip the old tire off, and then go to put the new one on, and then the new tire is now disappeared. So in the process of going to get the gun, my tire carrier thought that I had already taken the old tire off and put the new tire on. So he picked up the new tire and put it on the other side of the wall. So I had to go then to the other side of the wall and find my tire and grab my tire and go put my tire on and then sell the car. So yeah, that's one of the longest pit stop I've ever had. Absolute nightmare fuel.
My God.
You have to, like, absolutely make sure that you communicate everything perfectly good, like, to the every footstep almost.
Well, absolutely. But how do you do that when there's roaring engines everywhere and people, like, that's crazy. I know there's, like, hand signals, but what the hell is the hand signal for?
Hey, yeah, nobody knew.
Wait a minute. I got to go back here and do that, and then I'll be back. Wait for me. Like, what?
Thankfully, we are. That is a pretty good symbol that we use. Thankfully, we're mic'd up. So, like we could go up and mic each other up and technically say, hey, we got gun failure, or I can't find the wheel, but So in that moment, I was not using my mic. I was just trying to use hand signals, and everybody was trying to figure out what was going on. So it's also a learning experience when it happens. So,
yeah.
I can imagine how stressful that would be.
Oh, my God.
Do you remember which year Rolex 24 that was?
Oh.
We just did, it's 26, right? 25, yeah. 24, that probably would have been.
Okay.
Yep.
Damn.
Were you part of the team for the LMP2 cars the year? I don't remember what year it was. It wasn't a full season of IMSA for United Autosports, but they ran the 24 with Paul Di Resta, Fernando Alonso, and Lando Norris.
No, I was actually not a part of the team for that.
Okay.
But
I didn't even know that was a thing until I was digging around and was like, wait, what?
We do have some of the posters up in the shop from all that, so it probably would have been a pretty cool experience to see all those guys. But
crazy. Oh man. So do you work on one of the two United Autosports LMP2 cars, or do you guys work on both cars, just whatever needs doing?
So technically, now that I'm kind of doing body work this year, I do kind of handle the bodywork for both vehicles, for both cars. So I get to, like, I build all the noses and the tails and stuff like that, and disassemble them when they're broken and stuff like that.
I'll
tell you. When we go back to the shop, I work on the bodywork for both of them. But when we're at the track, I'm just strictly the two cars rear tire changer. And then if we have an issue with a nose or a tail, like if it needs to be rebuilt or something at the track, then I'll handle that at the track as well.
So that's you're so cool. Saying that at this year's Rolex 24, you were extremely busy.
Yes.
For like
yes.
Lap one.
Yes.
And then hour four. Yeah.
Unfortunately, very busy. Yes.
Yeah. So for the audio listeners, anyone who maybe wasn't watching the 24, basically, as is the case often in motorsports, lap one, turn one, there was a bit of an incident, as the internet might say. And sadly, the number two car for United Autosports, and I think Phil was driving at the time.
Yes. Yes. Correct. Still fair.
they got booped, but not quite as you would have expected. Like, Phil did a great job of avoiding the initial incident, which I don't understand how drivers do that. Like, stupid impressive. And he purposely spun the car around to rejoin the track. And then immediately got smashed into by Lutke in one of the other cars.
Goodbye.
Yeah. It's brutal to watch because he was so going to be just fine and carry on. And then the other car didn't see him. He didn't see the other car as well. And boop. So what,
bad circumstances.
In your world, what happens when you guys are seeing that on the broadcast, or you're hearing from your driver in the headphones?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, because it was a full-on, well, it was a full-on, like, behind-the-wall repair. Like, he didn't just come into pits. He went behind the wall.
So originally, like, what sucks about the incident was that, it was at the start of the race, and I'll be 100% honest. I was green. I was taping it. I had my Snapchat out. You know, I was taping the green flag. I was ready for the GTDs to come by. And in my ear, I hear the spotter go, "You got one spinning. All right, you're clear. You're clear. I'll just spin her around." And then it went quiet for about a second. And then you hear the biggest, "No!" And it's like, at that moment, you just know, like, there was big contact. And so, like, crap. When you hear that, like, and, like Sterling said, you kind of just like, well, like, all right, now what do I got to do? Like, how's it going to come in? But, like, at the same time, like, you put so much time and effort, and, you know, it's 2 weeks at the track. You know, it's a week of the roar and keeping the car in good condition. And it's another week of IMSA and doing practices, and then you got qualifying, and then the schedule is different because you also practice after you qualify. So you're kind of just trying to make it to the race. And we had a really good plan, and it hurts you inside a little. You know what I mean? It's heartbreaking a little bit. But, you know, you got 24 hours, so we all knew that it was pretty big contact. So when we saw him limp into the – like, obviously when that happens, everybody kind of just, like, looks at the feed because we have live feed cameras that are pointed all around the track that IMSA provides. So you kind of try and figure out, like, what damage you got, like, what you can fix. Like, if you can fix it on pit road, or are you going to go back to the – are you going to go back to the garage right away? So, when he got to the box, I tore off the left rear tire, and immediately you could see part of the floor was gone, the side pod was missing, like, fuck. It was out.
God,
it was
damn.
It was hurt. And then another one of the mechs came over and picked up the corner, and the whole corner moved, and at that moment, like, you know, well, that's not supposed to do that. So you put the new tires on.
Diag. Shit's fucked.
Exactly. I got a great GoPro video of that, actually. You can hear us saying that in the GoPro.
Shit's doinked, bud.
Killed. It was, you put it back on skates and tires and push it back to the garage, and then you start ripping into it. You figure out what's bent and what's bad, and you start taking all the bodywork off, and you start taking the corner off, and you got the mechs taking the corners off, and I was over there ripping all the elephant's feet and the side pods off with another mech while he was taking the planks and the floor off, and it really becomes a team effort at that point, because, like, while there's no communication going on, there's full communication going on, you know what needs to be done, you know what your job is, and that's the biggest thing. And I think we got the car back out. I think we went 19 laps down the first time. So, at that point, like, mathematically, on a 24-hour race, technically you're not out of it. And so, like, you know, we got back on the wall, tightened the tires, sent him back out. And then when we found out that we had an issue the second time, you know, at that point, you know, you're going behind the wall and the race isn't over, but, like, your chances of winning are definitely over. So at that point, you know, you just get the car back out and try and finish the race. And, you know, you've been there for so long that, like, you don't really want to give up in the first 4 hours. You kind of want to just go out there and finish the race and at least say that you did it. Because unfortunately, last year we didn't in the two car. We had another incident and the car was out. So this year I feel like we just wanted to go out there and just see if we could put the car back out for another 20 hours and pick up some spots. Because at the end of the year, if the championship, you never know. You know what I mean? Like, we picked up three spots in the last 20 hours we were out. And exactly, every point, every position, everything counts.
You guys were not dead last in class. Like, you guys came in 10th out of 13, even with everything that went wrong. That at the 4 hour mark, like, according to what I read, you guys suspected, like, a drive shaft issue, like residual damage from the original incident, and then pushing hard to try and catch up, and eventually something just sort of gave up. How the hell do you fix something as big as, like, a drive shaft issue on the fly? Sure. At a, like, thank you, Sterling.
Brain.
Like, yes, brain. How do brain such massive repairs and potential issues? Because, like if the steering goes out when your driver is going full send down a straight or something, you potentially have a terrifying issue.
Yeah.
So how do you do that stuff so fast and luckily, the car back out there and drive 20 more hours?
Luckily, I would say, while sometimes race cars are a pain in the ass to work on, like, they are made, they're made nice to do stuff like that, right? So, like, when you change, they basically change an axle, like, you could just change just the stick, but really we have spares and stuff that are kitted up. Like, we have a whole gearbox technically with both rear axles and corners ready to go. So that way, if we ever had a gearbox issue, you just take a gearbox off and you slide the next one on, and you're good to go. And same thing with the corners. We have corners with axles already built up, pre-greased, ready to slide in. That way, if you just have an issue like that, you take off the upper and the lower control arm and you unbolt the axle and a couple of the sensors, and then you slap the new one on and you go ahead and go on about your day. So
I wish passenger cars
were that easy. Place car stuff is cool.
Yeah. Plus, it sounds like you guys have the most, like, actually functional parts department I've ever heard of.
it's impressive functional sometimes, like, department. The amount of stuff that comes through.
Uh-huh. That's a thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. One question that I have before we go to the Patreon questions is, how did you manage to keep your sanity through that 6-hour, like, fog-induced safety car?
Oh, yeah. Were you guys also reading The Cat in the Hat to each other?
No. Like, funny enough, our sister car was playing music through, our engineer was playing music through their intercom system and through the radio for their drivers to stay awake. Our driver was kind of just chatting it up with our engineer every once in a while, wondering how long he had left, how long he was in the car, and stuff like that. So we I would say for my team it was honestly pretty nice after the thrash that we had in the first couple hours. Like, once we saw the fog roll in, we kind of were like, oh, we might get a little break here, you know what I mean? And so, well, I remember when the fog first rolled in, and then through the caution, we kind of all looked at each other and we were like, all right, well, I wonder how this is going to go. And I think that was like 1:30. I think, we did a couple short pit stops where we just filled for gas. And so it was like 3:30 where I finally sat down against the toolbox on that stack of tires and just laid my head back and kind of rested for about, it was probably 35, 40 minutes, I think, before we came in for fuel again. And so that's how we kept our sanity. We kind of all kind of just took our breaks while we had it. You know what I mean? I have a great, nice, great video from when the fog first came rolled in and went yellow of my pit box. Because actually, like, the tire guy was doing tire stuff. The fueler was juggling oranges. I was videoing. Like, everybody was up doing something. And I walked down to the sister box that was about a box away because there's two Ferraris in between us. And you walk in, you got the tire guy, he was doing his tire stuff, but everybody else is passed out asleep in the corner, laying up against the wall. Like, it was funny. It was quite the horse, quite the difference in boxes. So it was funny. But
send that video to me and I'll put it on the video episode for the show.
Definitely.
I thought I thought horses slept standing up or whatever.
Oh, horse, no, that's a myth. I don't.
Ferrari's gonna Ferrari.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Yes.
Scott.
How many of those Snapchat videos do you have?
Oh man, just the stuff that I've taken?
Yeah.
Enough that I actually had to pay for the Snapchat upgrade so they didn't get rid of all my memories.
Wow.
Yeah.
I have
turned those into videos. Do that. Do that. You should put those on Instagram.
I've thought about that. I have a GoPro. I wear a GoPro too, because I GoPro all my videos, all my stops, because I look at it after the stop, see if I can improve anyway or if anything. So I've been wanting to post those, but I just really haven't gotten around to doing that. So, but it's on my thing.
Hell yeah,
do it.
Is your team totally supportive of your do it?
Do it.
ADHD moment. Are they totally supportive of your social media posts and everything? Like,
definitely. As long as, obviously, as long as you're not like slandering the team you're posting. Right, exactly. Yeah. You can't be posting
fuck this
certain
job.
Photos and stuff. But
yeah,
but definitely they. Like,
Man, so and so peed in the seat again.
Again?
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely not
again. Goddamn piece of shit.
Hell yeah. Well, we'll go ahead and segue over into the premium Patreon questions here for you. If you want to be a part of this specific listener interaction segment over on our Patreon, you can go and become a premium member on that web page. And we'll start here with premium member Forced User. And they ask, what is the most underestimated risk in the pits?
Oh, man. I've seen some gnarly videos. I would have to say, like, everyone thinks that one of the biggest risks is getting hit, and it is. I've unfortunately, last year I watched a our neighbor get taken out by the rear wing of our car. He ended up being fine.
The fuck over.
Yeah, we got a penalty for it, and he got a couple of bruised ribs. But I would say fire. Fire is actually probably one of the biggest, and maybe people will guess that too. But like,
I think that's just a general concern in life, you know.
Spontaneously,
I don't want to be burned.
That stuff is no joke, though. I got to smell VP racing fuel for the first time yesterday because they were gassing up a car in the shop. Oh no, it's delightful.
It depends on whichever one you smell. I like the IMSA E10 stuff we have now. I'm not the biggest fan as like the IMSA E100 we ran, but. I get where you're talking about the smell of race fumes.
Yeah.
Unbeatable.
It was different, man.
It is.
It was different. But so hopefully you have never personally caught on fire at work.
No, thankfully I've never caught on fire. I've been really close to it, but I've never caught on fire. Our car's caught on fire.
You haven't had a Jos Verstappen moment?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Thankfully.
Excellent.
Hell yeah. We'll go to the next Holy one cow. Here. Chrysler Connection, premium member Chrysler Connection asks, if you had to switch career paths tomorrow and couldn't be involved in automotive anymore, where would you go?
That is a great question.
It's like asking to leave your dream job. Like what?
quite literally.
What's your worst case scenario plan?
Worst case scenario plan is I would probably go back home, and I have a buddy that works in wastewater, and he said if anything ever happened, the worst case scenario, I could go there and get a job with him. So I would move back to Colorado and do that. But other than that, I can't really say that I've made a backup plan. So I would
in it for the long haul.
I've always thought if I got out of racing that I would figure out honestly, I'd do custom car stuff or something like that, figure out body work how to do something like that. So,
sick.
You have good speaking presence and clearly an eye for making social media content. You never know. Maybe there's some sort of commentator role in your retirement future or what have you, if you get caught on fire. Yeah,
as long as we don't catch on fire. You got to save this, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Not the face.
Not the face.
Premium member Police 428 asks, as someone who is stuck in the dealership and is tired of it, what is your advice to get out of the dealer and into motorsports?
Man, so funny enough, one of my best guys I work with was, I think I said it earlier, was in the dealership life for a long time, 10 years. He said the same thing. He was sick of it. He quite literally heard from a buddy that worked in the safety department over on another store, that we were looking for people. So he just made a resume with all of his experience and came and dropped it off at the shop. And Billy called him back and gave him a job, actually in our vintage department at first, working on all the vintage cars and working on that stuff. But and then he came over to the racing side. But that would be my biggest. Well, what am I looking for? That would be the biggest thing to go do. Recommendation. Advice, yeah. There you go. Yeah, advice.
Easiest way to get your foot in the door, anyway.
Yeah, depending on what area you're in, you know what I mean. Like if you have availability to go to shops and drop resumes off, or just even send them in online, or you know, there's Facebook pages and stuff like that that you can find for racing jobs that you could shoot people messages, and you just never know what can happen. So if you have wrenching experience.
Oh yeah. Is IMSA kind of like IndyCar, where a lot of the teams are sort of their home base is in the same area, or are IMSA teams sort of like home bases spread out all over?
No, most of the IMSA programs, there's quite a few here in the Charlotte area, in the Mooresville area. We got several teams, but there's also Indy. If you live near Indianapolis, there's teams up there in Indy, kind of like where IndyCar and stuff is. There's teams based out of there. And then there's actually teams in Canada, and there's teams in Detroit. So like up in that area, like Chicago. Okay. I'm sorry, like Chicago area. That's okay, where there's a couple of teams up there. So
everyone from Detroit's so like, fuck.
Well, so basically, sorry, if you're a good tech and you want to get out of the dealership and into the pits, like it, as long as you're in those areas or willing to go there, like you might have more of a shot of getting your foot in the door than you think.
For sure. For sure.
That was going to be my question. Like how do racing teams see like career mechanics who want to get into motorsports? Is that like a valid thing to like a prerequisite
to get into
motorsports? Yeah, no reason for asking. Asking for a friend.
Definitely. I you know, it depends on like your level of experience too, you know what I mean? Like if they see that you've been doing it for 5, 10, 15 years, like you're proven, you got ASCs, like, you know what I mean? Like you're labeled, you're credentialed, like you have everything. Like, you got a pretty good chance at being able to go wrench and getting your foot into the door. I'm not saying that if you don't have any experience that you're not going to be able to. Obviously, like I went to school and then got hired in, but that was about all the experience I had other than just working on like my cars at home and stuff like that. But I also didn't start working on cars right away. You know, I started washing the trucks and sweeping the floors and taking care of the equipment and doing stuff like that until
paying your
dues. Exactly. And showing that you want to show up and you want to be there and be a teammate and do what you're told. And then when they see that, then maybe you're given a wrench. And, you know, even if you come in with 10 to 15 years of experience, it's hard sometimes because like you want a wrench, but like, In the race world, there's a lot of similarities, but there's a lot of differences in how things are done, like versus like street cars, you know what I mean? And so like you probably wouldn't start off wrenching right away, or if you do, like you'd probably be doing like easy stuff, you know what I mean? Changing the brakes or building brakes up or and stuff like that. But it's also like once you get it down, like race cars are just like a puzzle. Like, you know, it's just a puzzle that you take apart and put it back together. And it's cool because you work on the same car all the time. You know what I mean? And you get to know your car's quirks and everything that it needs. And it's cool. It's different. But definitely, put it in there and get your name out there because it's not as hard as you think.
Oh, cool.
You're giving me ideas.
Is the travel hard to deal with? Like,
it depends if you like to travel or not. You know, like as a guy that just has this kitty cat, like I don't mind traveling and going and seeing the East Coast and going to Daytona and going to Sebring and going to see Wisconsin and New York and going to Canada every year and going to see cool stuff and eating at cool places and seeing stuff that you wouldn't think that you normally see, right? That if you were just in the same area all the time. So I love travel, but you know, there's people that have issues with travel because people have issues with them traveling. So, I mean, it's just kind of all what you want to do. So
very cool. Yeah.
We'll go to the next.
Ever been to the Nürburgring?
Oh, yeah.
No, it is on my list to go there though. I would love to go to Nürburgring.
Me too.
Field trip.
That's one of my,
go rent M2s.
That's a go-to for me. The dream place.
Hell yeah.
Yes.
Premium member Nick Toomey asks, got any crazy stories about your time in class with Serrated? That is a real question.
Oh, just one damn.
Man, I don't really know if I have any crazy stories with you. Unfortunately, we had a few classes, but...
Yeah, we had a few classes together. The main thing that stuck out with me was the one time that like I ran into you and a couple of other guys from class at GoPro.
Yes. And I definitely remember that.
Yeah.
Yes. 100%. That's the time that sticks into my head too. There was like six or seven of us that day that went racing. And
six, seven.
It was like six, seven.
Six, seven.
But then like, that was before I started working there too. So that was like really early into being at the school there.
Yeah. So, yep. That was super early. If I remember correctly, it was like me, you, Jaden, Derek, Logan.
Yeah, I remember that.
Probably like two others, but yeah.
I still have the picture on my Instagram, I think.
Yes, I do believe so, yeah.
So I'll put that up on the screen right here. You can see me with long hair and shit.
Yeah.
Well, there it is. That's crazy.
Thor.
Yep.
Old Thor.
That's still my biker name back home. But
good. I was wondering if it still floats around.
It still does. I have the because I got my hair cut for Mercedes, I have the axe instead of Mjolnir. I've got the axe on my key ring. I've got a little thing when Thor got his hair cut in the movies. So that's what that reference is to. But yeah, there was a lot of GoPro shenanigans back then. It's called Trackhouse Motorplex now.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. Started working there. And did you go to GoPro a lot after I started working there? Like,
I did. I think we went as much as I could afford as a college student at that time. But I went quite a bit. I still go quite a bit. I actually just went a couple weeks ago. So
that's right. You still live in Mooresville, don't you?
Yeah.
That's right. Okay. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. No, like I had to move. I couldn't stay in Mooresville. So,
dude, I'll tell you right now. It is rough with the traffic here. It is rough.
Has it gotten worse?
150 is terrible. It's like driving on 77.
Fuck.
It takes me 30 minutes to get to work. And work is over next to where Trackhouse is. And I live, I don't know if you remember where Kickback Jacks and that AutoZone is at the end of 150. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's where I live. So it takes me a half hour to get to work. So
fucking hell. Damn.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's busy here. It's busy.
Alrighty then. Do you have any Moors there?
No. Any Moors?
Mooresville, yeah. You know what I mean?
Mooresville.
Are they still there?
I know of them more.
JJ's fucking face.
That was like,
shut the fuck up.
That was one of the reasons why I wanted to work at GoPro Motorplex when I got into school, was because I did the math. And after I had graduated, I counted up all of the free races that I did, because the software that they use at the track counts all your races.
Yep.
Every single race that I did while I was working there equaled up to $1,500 worth of races that I did for free.
And
that was like the biggest worth it of working there.
That's so worth it.
Yo.
So yeah, a lot of shenanigans at NASCAR Techers, like if you're trying to get into motorsports, are centered around that outdoor go-kart track. There's a lot of stuff going on there. We'll go to the next
one
here.
Celsius overdoses, right?
Yeah. There's a reason why I don't drink that shit anymore.
This is not sponsored by Celsius.
No, never will be. Canute asks, how did you get into the position you are in? We already answered that. And assuming it's different from a normal 9-to-5 mechanic job, how is it different?
Well, you know, obviously other than the whole 24-hour race where you stay up for 24 hours.
That's a little bit different, I would say.
So maybe the Celsius stops, sponsorship wouldn't be so bad.
I'm telling you, we could have used Celsius sponsorship that night. Our shop, we kind of like to try and stay, our hours are more like 7 to 3:30 when we can. But obviously, like when you have work lined up and you're trying to meet a deadline, the truck's got to be loaded or something. Like sometimes, you know, that 8-hour day can turn into a 9, 10, 11, 12-hour day. And oof, sometimes even a bit longer than that. And then the next day, you know, same thing. Like there's, so it could easily stack up into hours. And like if you're a 9-to-5 and you love 9-to-5, I don't want to say it's not for you, but like there's plenty of long days at the track and long hours that you just mentally got to be prepared for. And, you know, any normal 8-hour day could easily turn into a 16-hour day just like that. Like sometime an all-nighter, like the one of the AWA cars, we had night practice Thursday night, I want to say, or it was Wednesday night. It was one of the two nights. And we had just finished practice and they went to either fuel their car up for one final run or for capacity check. And unfortunately, they had a mishap and burnt the rear half of their car down. So their 12-hour day just turned into a 30-hour day because they stayed up all night, turned the car down, and rebuilding the whole rear end of the car. So, and it's stuff like that that you just can't plan for, and you just got to be ready for. So,
dude, what is your strategy for that? Like, when you show up for, you know, the Rolex 24, what's your, like, what do you come to the track with and what have you for those nights where you either know they're going to be long or like, how do you they prep could for be? That? Because, like, so before, I have been warned that at my work, right now, it's very much 5 o'clock rolls around. No overtime. Get the fuck out.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I've been normal. Warned that there are those days where, like, the car has to get done. Like, it's got to be here for this, for that. And you will eventually be here till 2, 3, 4 in the morning some days.
Yep. So well, I would say, like, days, like, you can't really plan for it sometimes, but like for like the 24-hour race, I'll say I came with 2 backpacks. One backpack was an extra pair of Nomex in case I got the chance to go change my fireproofs during the race. And then my other backpack had jackets, chargers for my phone that I could plug in, and I had a charging tower so other people could plug their stuff in directly to the tower. I had a toothbrush, toothpaste, stuff like that, hand sanitizer, because like you're going to the porta potties for 24 hours, so like hand sanitizer is big, you know what I mean? And wet wipes, stuff like that, so you can wash your hands, wash your face off, and kind of like refresh. So that's kind of stuff that I prepped myself with for the 24 hour for days that you know are going to be long. Like toothbrush, toothpaste, big is a big thing to bring. Underrated.
Duly noted.
Underrated device, toothbrushes. I think people should use them more often.
Yes. Agreed.
My big thing is someone who openly and publicly despises the flat rate system. If you tell me that we're about to have a 30-hour day in a race team and I go, am I going to get paid for those 30 hours and I don't have to worry about not getting paid for doing work for free? And they'll be like, yeah, you're going to get paid for those 30 hours. Sign me up. Give me what do you need done? Yep. I'm going to do it.
Yep.
That's what it matters. Because flat rate, you can be like, oh, I've been here for fucking 15 hours and only made 3 hours of money. Like, that's just stupid.
Yeah.
So when you say you have 30-hour days on a race team, that doesn't sound that bad because you're going to get paid no matter what. Am I right?
If you're hourly. Yes. If you go in as a contractor, so I don't want to say unfortunately, but I'm a salary based employee.
Oh, okay.
So when we have a 30-hour day, which luckily is only during like the 24-hour, you know what I mean? Thankfully, it's not that much. But so when that happens, like, you know, I'm salary. So the company is pretty fair about if you work days like that, they really try to give you days off at the back end, holiday days, or, you know, like. So say after we came back from the 24 hour, we drove back on Monday afterwards. And then Tuesday we unloaded the trucks, came in late, unloaded the trucks. And, Billy told us to leave. So like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we were off. So, you know, we got those 5 days off to kind of, to recoup and recover and get ready for the next work week. And not that it made the work week any shorter, but, you know, at least we got some time off and time to decompress and get ready to go back. So I'd say that's kind of the balance there. That's how they do that.
Yeah.
That sounds like a dream compared to the flat rate system, to be completely honest with you.
I imagine.
Would it be crazy for me to ask what your salary is? Or is that like...
I don't make... I make under 6 figures for sure. I don't make anything super crazy. Okay. So,
but you're not on the low end of that.
No, definitely not on the
$20,000.
No minimum wage. Minimum wage. No, okay. No. Well,
poverty.
Cool. That's good to hear.
That'd be a little awkward when Zach Brown is like boss's boss, right?
Yeah. They pay us fairly for what we got to do.
Well, last thing you need is a disgruntled employee when like a tenth of a second can ruin your day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Next question here. GY exclamation yeet asks, if you wanted, how would you progress your career from your current position? Basically, where do you see yourself in 10 years?
I could break that down into two different ways for you. And the first one is if I wanted to stay a full-time employee and work, do the shop and do the track stuff still and for the next 10 years. And that would hopefully be in the next 10 years. That'd be either leading the shop or leading a car. You know what I mean? One, like kind of just having my crew and doing what it is. But if that didn't work out, if I wasn't staying the full-time role, you know, I've looked into doing the contract stuff possibly and flying in, because I love IMSA and I love that stuff, but there's a lot of racing out there. And if I could fill my time doing other series and stuff, I think it'd be cool, because there's, you know, there's plenty of vintage stuff out there, and there's TA racing, and obviously there's IMSA and there's NASCAR, but there's also all sorts of different like sports car racing, and it'd be cool to kind of to go see the different ways that races are ran in the different series and stuff like that. But so it'd be being on contract in 10 years would be another thing, but that's even more travel and that's even more time away from home. So, you know, it's something that's a whole different thing you got to sign up for.
Right. Hell yeah.
Shit.
Holy cow.
Hell yeah, brother.
Next question here. This is a good one.
Yeah.
Premium member Meep But in Japanese asks, have you ever been thunder cunted by a tire before?
What does that mean?
Yeah, we need to look up the definition of thunder cunted real fast.
I think that just means hit.
It's like a step above heat. You've got chuck, yeah. You've got yeet, and then you've got thunder cunt. That's
okay.
The
like, all right.
Like, yeah. I think thankfully, in British, it might say, like, sent to the yeeted. Shadow realm or what. Yeah.
Sent to the shadow realm. Okay. All right. Thankfully, no, I've never been sent to the shadow realm by a tire. I've been heads up on it, trying to stay away from straight tires.
Hell yeah.
Nice. That you ever gotten, okay. Like...
I'm just imagining, I know, like training for that. Like, dodgeball. He's, like, throwing wrenches, you know? You can dodge a wrench. You can dodge a tire.
Yeah.
You can dodge a wrench, you can dodge another tire.
You can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a car.
I know that, like, with a lot of race car stuff, like, shit is always, like, really hot. Do you ever get, like, fucking burned?
I have been burned a couple times, yeah. Just not paying attention, especially around, like, the rotors and the exhaust. When you're not paying attention, you quickly touch it real fast and singes your hands.
Like, oh, fuck.
So hot. brake fluid is another one. You don't realize it if you have to do like a hot brake fluid bleed. Yikes. Like we had an accident unfortunately over the Rolex where I had a coworker that got her hand singed because the brake fluid was so hot when it came out, it just melted. It was bad. So
yeah, it was, I can imagine it's hot brake fluid.
Definitely. Yeah, that's definitely.
Like a double whammy.
Yeah.
Fucking
it was rough.
Brake fluid sucks and, enough like, already.
Some highly acidic chemical too. Yeah. Like, this is gonna be fun. Great.
Yeah.
Do the race cars use hopefully like DOT6 okay. or something now?
No, we use a whole different.
Oh yeah, it's not. Doesn't have to be DOT. What the fuck am I talking about?
Got 6.7.
Hopefully, your coworker recovered. Like
yes, yeah. She was all fine after a couple days. She actually did the whole 24-hour race. She's our front tire changer too. So she did all the tires the whole time. Yes.
Badass.
Sent the car. So yeah, pretty badass.
That is so cool. Like I'm going off on a tangent real quick, but the first time I went to the Long Beach Grand Prix, it was the first like in-person motorsports I've been to, and walking through the pits for like the GT3 cars and all that. And there were so many women in the garages for so many different teams. And I definitely cried. And it just
women in motorsports
was
is becoming a big
amazing.
Thing.
Amazing.
Sick.
It was so cool to see.
Hell yeah.
And okay. Sorry. Tangent over.
You're
representation
good.
Matters. Like yes, I love that.
It is. Oh. It's awesome to see and it's becoming even more and more in the last years. So it's awesome to see.
Every year I go back to Long Beach, I see more and more. I'm so excited. It's only a matter of time until hopefully I see a woman in a podium winning team in like various IMSA categories. Like
Definitely. In
the car. It's, oh, anyways, okay. I'll get off the soapbox.
No, you're good. We'll go to the last premium member Patreon question here by Horsepower Geek. Horsepower Geek asks, what's your funniest story from the pits?
Oh, man. Man, you have so many good stories from the pits.
Do you fuck with other guys when they fall asleep while everybody else is still awake? Like, is being definitely, the first one to fall asleep dangerous?
Definitely sometimes. The other box was doing that to some guys during it, especially taking pictures of everybody. It's fun to get pictures of everybody while you're while people are falling asleep or while they're hanging on for dear life. And, you know, doing the head bobs and stuff. So, man, funniest story? I got to think on that one for a second. Let's see. Obviously, we always post a bunch of not safe for work words around the work area. You know what I'm saying? So
any automotive last year,
we had some guys that were labeling each other's names like on tire boxes and on the tent and stuff, and so. While that was going on, we had one of the bigger bosses that decided to walk up into the tent and made direct eye contact with the names and stuff, and made eye contact with one of the tire guys, and then made eye contact with it again, and it kind of just like busted out laughing and started walking away, and so then everybody else started busting around because everybody thought they were in trouble real fast, and then turns out everybody was good, so.
That's good.
But there's always stories and stuff like that that's going on down there.
Nice.
Hell yeah. I guess as long as it doesn't go on the international feed, then it's...
Yeah, exactly. Like the cameraman that flipped off the international feed. I don't know if you guys saw that during the roar.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
That was right up there with the cameraman who did the insane camera work on that one pit stop where he's like spinning the camera around and shit.
Oh yeah, of course.
And that so many times. Well, yeah,
some of our cameramen
are amazing.
Our guys are pretty good down there. They're pretty great.
I do want to talk about this. I remember during a Rolex 24, I believe it was the 2022 Rolex 24. One of the commentators, when they were doing a recap of the race halfway through the race. They accidentally called the International Horseshoe the International Horse Poo on live TV. And I've been calling that corner that ever since.
International.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That was you had to be watching at that certain point in time because I can't find it on YouTube anywhere. Like no one recorded it, no one saved it, nothing. Like I can't find it. Yeah, they just scrubbed it, but there was that, like it was on the IMSA page for a little bit. It's not there anymore. And there was also somebody on Twitter who also reacted to it. So that's how I know I didn't fucking hallucinate them saying that. But
oh, man, I still love the WEC commentators like clip that keeps going around of them telling kids to go eat cake in the middle of the night.
Yep. That's just one of the best.
Dude, those commentators doing God's work, and when it's like 3 a.m. and like there's nothing but fog, and it's been yellow for hours, and they're somehow even like keeping it going.
Le Mans last year, where it rained for 10 hours. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like I couldn't imagine.
Well, thank you to our premium members over on the Flag Time Patreon for their involvement in that. We'll go ahead and go over to the Instagram responses, and as per tradition. Over on the Flag Time Instagram, we always highlight the first response. And tonight's first response is by BenS25. And they ask, how deaf are you?
What? Right now, I'm pretty good. I haven't lost hearing yet. But I try to use hearing protection on pit road, especially when the Miatas are out on track.
Oh, that's
because you want to talk about a loud vehicle. I love my Miatas and my MX5s. But even when I talk about a loud pack of cars, oh my gosh, I try and keep ear protection in all the time, whether it's my earbuds or like I'm just listening to music with some beats in, or you know what I'm saying, some stuff like that. So because yeah, you'll go deaf pretty quick. I know some deaf guys.
Chilled. Thus the hand signals.
Yeah, exactly.
What?
Let's see. Instagram user Caleb Sully01 asks, what's your fastest tire change time? You guys keep track of that?
We do, actually. And we just said it during the Rolex. I want to say it was either we did the four tires in 15.4 or it was 15.1. I can't remember which one of the two it was. I definitely know we did a 15.4 two times in a row.
Hell yeah.
I can't remember if we did another one before that. Yeah, which is pretty good, which is pretty
amazing,
pretty sporty for us. So yeah, it was pretty fast.
Is that a team record?
I want to say the other car might have a 14.9.
Oh, fuck.
So we're chasing them. Oh. We're chasing them.
Fuckers. Yeah.
Go get them.
We're right there. Go we're get right em. There.
Definitely do not look like wankers. That is top tier pit stop material.
Hell yeah.
Oh.
Instagram user Moonbase Omega asks, what is the biggest high you've had in your career?
Easily. It was the year 2023. It was the end of 2023 season. It was the last year we did the P3s. All year we had been chasing a win. You know, we got second place. Second place in Watkins Glen after we got booted off the track. Second place in Canada after we got booted off the track with 5 minutes left. We were trying so hard to get it because we knew it was the last year that we were going to have the P3s. And so we went to Road Atlanta, which is the final race of the year. And throughout the whole season, we did both the series. We did the WeatherTech series and we did the VP Sports Car Championship series, which was also the first year for that. It was the inaugural season. And we had won a bunch of races throughout the season and that, but the WeatherTech race had just eluded us for so long. So we go to the Petite and we do the VP Challenge weekend. We win the first race. So then all we have to do the second race is finish the race to get the championship. And actually during the second race, he was just driving around in third and the first place guy ran out of fuel. And the second place guy spun and ended up in the gravel trap a couple turns before the finish line. So we ended up taking the second win for the VP race. So we won those two races and then we won the championship, obviously. And then we went over to the WeatherTech side and had a lightning fast car. I think we set the fastest lap. We missed out on sitting on the pole. But we ended up winning that race with like a lot, I think 20 minutes left in the race. He made a pass and we went on to win that race. And so weekend we did like we had everything except for pole position. I want to say it was that we could possibly win. And it was just a fantastic weekend. The only thing that would have made it better is if we could have won the WeatherTech championship, but we just barely missed out on that. So it was a great weekend. Very great weekend. Haven't had another one like it since.
I can't even imagine what that would feel like.
It was part of
a team doing that.
Yeah,
like
it was
one of my bucket list items is to at least be part of a pit crew, if not help drive for a 24 hours of Lemons team.
Oh yeah, that'd be so much fun.
I can have that like race team experience.
Yeah,
because I know good and well, like there's a reason I became a mechanic. I am too risk averse to be a good racing driver. There's no way. I can't get over the self-preservation instincts. But man, that must be so cool. Holy cow, it was
quite a weekend.
How did you guys celebrate, if you can say?
We went to Waffle House.
You never know.
Ate Waffle House.
Hell yeah.
Fuck yes.
We witnessed the fight.
Fuck yes.
Waffle House at 1:30 in the morning with the trophy on the table. So
that's the most North Kakalaki celebration I've ever fucking heard in my life.
It was the greatest thing. Greatest thing.
Fucking brilliant.
We'll do this one last response here. This is by Rob Oil, I guess. I don't know how to pronounce your name.
Give me it back. Give it back.
They ask, I have heard that NASCAR pit crew members are former football players. Were you an athlete before you became a pit crew member? That's what they asked.
That's legit. There's there's like a couple of pit guys that are kind of, the commentators love to talk to them before the race starts. It makes for good TV because they used to play professional or semi-professional sports.
Yeah, NASCAR, you'll see that like everywhere. The whole, all of the pit crew in NASCAR will be mostly professional, like ex-professional sports. I can't say that I was like a professional sports. I didn't play like in college. I didn't play NFL or anything like that. I mean, I played in high school. I played basketball. I played baseball, played courtyard football and stuff like that. But I was not like a top prospect to college or anything like that. So I would, I think that's the one cool thing about IMSA is that like a lot of the mechs are also the pit crew and vice versa. You know what I mean? So like in NASCAR, you have, you have this different crews. You have the people that work on the car at the shop and then at the track. And then you have just the pit crew that comes in and just does pit crew stuff during the race. So like we're grinding the whole time. You know, we're working on the car. We're doing all the cleaning and making it look good. And then we're also doing the pit stops for the whole race. So, yeah, I guess the short answer to that was not a professional athlete, but
I would imagine you train for your job. Yeah. You'd have to,
I just go to the gym. I mean, I go to the gym and work out, and that's about it. Lift weights and hit the stair climber and try and stay in good shape. But yeah, I don't like have a professional trainer or anything like that.
Very cool.
I feel like that's a little bit more, you have a bit more like sentimentality to your car. It, since you're like so involved with it and you're not like a separate like person or separate team that goes to the race just specifically for this. So like you, it's almost like a cradle to grave kind of thing. Like you're there in the shop and you're there at the track. So you have a bit more skin in the game basically.
Yeah.
Is what it sounds like. Yeah,
definitely. Like it's funny. Cause when you see like the NASCAR guys like chopping up the race car and chopping up the bodywork and stuff like that, like they're out there like doing, obviously they're out there doing their job. Right. But like, you know, that there's people behind the wall that are, or at the shop that are like wincing when they're watching that happen. You know what I mean? Cause they're just, oh my, like I gotta add that to the list. Like when I'm back. So it's the same thing with the track. Like when you send the car out for a practice session and it comes back and it's got a nick on the floor or the tail's busted up or something on the nose is busted up, they're kind of just like, all right, well, now I've got to add that to the list and keep on digging. So you can see it right away and fix it. But
Sterling, JJ, do you guys have any further questions?
I don't even know. I feel like I did, but I just got so into listening to every response and every story that my brain was just like, oh, don't need this.
I got a question.
How?
Yes.
Scott.
Outside of racing, like what other like car adjacent stuff do you do? I know you got a, I've seen your Miata.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. I took a scroll through your Instagram.
I got my little purple Miata that, you know, eventually I want to do a little bit more work to, kind of just really poke around on that thing. But, you know, eventually I want to get like a project car. I would love to get a classic car and actually build it from the ground up, like frames up and stuff like that. Once I get into, you know, get a garage or something that I could do that, I'm going to start exploring that option. But right now I kind of just, you know, race cars and the little Miata. So.
Hell yeah, buddy. That's cool.
Yeah.
The answer is,
you ever want to do any like motorsport stuff of like your own?
I would love to, like the 24-hour lemons and Le Mans lemons, you know, I would like to go like explore stuff like that. I think it'd be fun. I've had a couple buddies that go and do that up at VIR. So I would, I know one of these years would be cool to go tag along or figure out something like that, or, you know, go karting, do a karting tour, you know, get an old 90s Miata and do vintage racing. Cause there's something, there's packs of old Miatas that do vintage stuff. So I think that'd be cool too, but I'd love to.
That's fucking
awesome.
Do
some spec Miata.
Yeah. Spec Miata would be really cool.
Hell yeah. That's so cool. I'd love to do something like that at some point.
What's funny about spec Miata is like, I'll watch the in real life spec Miata races. And then when I was doing like iRacing spec Miata leagues with a bunch of people that I met while I was at NASCAR Tech, so like David Levine and everybody who was also at GoPro at that time, it's just as crazy as it is in real life. Like it's everybody's beating and banging. There's huge wrecks. Like, I've flipped my Miata like multiple times. Like, it's so crazy. Whoops. How just so that crazy. Little Miata can just be
totally
so
thunder-cunted into the Shadow Realm. Exactly. Yeah. And in VR, there, that's a over trick. There.
When you crash in VR,
oh god.
Oh my gosh.
It's fucking insane. But yeah, no, spec Miatas are super fun, dude. Like, that's
they are.
Fuck yeah.
I wouldn't imagine that they were that loud. Like,
oh yeah, the MX5 cup cars, they cut the exhaust off of them, and so it's just basically just like straight piped open headers. Oh my gosh, dude, they're so loud. They're so they put on some of the best racing, but man, are they so loud.
Holy cow.
They're buzzing.
Yep. Bunch of bees.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
So what's your schedule? Go ahead. Go ahead, sir.
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Do you ever play any racing games? Any racing video games?
Yeah, I have iRacing too. I love doing iRacing. Yeah. I got a little sim set up back here
that one.
I moved out of the way, but
yeah.
Yeah, iRacing instead of Corsa, I'll do it all.
All the good shit.
We might need to set up a flag time sim racing league, guys.
Yeah, that might be a good idea.
Might
actually.
Need to do that.
That would
wait for me
really
to
good.
Get one first.
We're just gonna like pressure you into it by giving you shit for not showing up.
Give me money and I will get it immediately.
I'll give you some old pedals. I'll get you started
moving right now. Yeah, so yeah. I need to move first and then and then I'll do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I want to do that really soon.
We'll get some sponsors for you and get you set up. We gotta figure this out.
Hell yeah.
There
hey,
we
Moza,
go.
Hey Moza, yeah. You wanna hook up Sterling?
Please. Any
greetings, Logitech.
Closest thing I have to like a sim racing setup is a Logitech whatever the PlayStation 4 one is and Gran
probably
Turismo G27. Sport. Yeah, that one. It was like a G27 or a G29. I think it's a G29. Yeah. And then I used to just like I mean, because VR mode on Gran Turismo Sport, I don't have Gran Turismo 7. I don't even know what the VR mode is there. But I just like would take the world record holding Nürburgring car and just drive on the Nürburgring until I get at least kind of close to that. And I don't remember what my time was, but I don't know. It's like kind of close to the world record. But that's a video game, so like it's also old Gran Turismo, so it's like kind of just not a nothing point.
Yeah. I'm so deep into the Fanatec ecosystem that this
look
is
at that.
I have. Yeah.
Dude,
I have a Momo steering wheel for a Honda Civic right here.
Our sim rig situation here has
in
gotten
box.
So out of control. It is.
I
say, what base do you have?
Like,
what frame?
Gimme.
Dude, that is sick.
Too bad I'm broke.
Yeah.
Is that like a track racer?
Ours
or?
Over here.
Nice. Yeah, I think so, actually. There. It seems about right.
Yeah, it looks like a track racer.
Yeah.
That's
computer
that's
car
nonsense
moment.
At oh, the yeah. moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
With the Grello on the Nürburgring with Kevin Estra in there.
Sick.
But my husband actually just started working at a sim racing place. This
ooh,
week. So
nice.
The yo. Escalation continues further. Oh, it's yeah. becoming a huge thing. So yeah, let's work on this, guys. Let's
yes. do I like this. That.
It'll be fun.
Flag time.
I got Sterling, so we're good.
I'll be the person that just yeets it on lap one, turn one, and then watches. But
I can't get anything until I move.
Yep. So what's
you can do the commentary.
That works too. So Jacob, what's your schedule look like for this year so we can keep track and root for you?
So
yes.
Let's see, look, let me I could actually pull it up real fast. Sebring is in March
and you're with the number
I gotta
two
follow
car,
this because
right? Well, I am with the two car, yes, correct.
The number two car, yes, yeah. Okay,
the number yes. 22 took P4 in class at the Rolex, so
yes. Yeah,
clearly,
they have a really
there's good
race.
Bones to the car. So y'all just got to not get yeeted in lap one, turn one. There's a lot of potential there. Yeah.
So obviously we just did Daytona. So Sebring is March 12th through the 15th. And then obviously we have a little break. So we don't do Long Beach. We don't do Long Beach, Laguna Seca, or Detroit, or Mid-Ohio. The next time we'll be back is Watkins Glen, June 26th through the 29th. And then we're the main show in Canada, July 11th through the 13th. And then Road America, July 31st through the August 3rd. And then we'll do Indy, September 19th through the 21st. And then we'll have our last race at Road Atlanta, in October 8th through the 11th.
Okay. Hell yeah.
And that is our season.
Awesome.
Hell yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, JJ, when you mentioned that the sister team got fourth in class, it sparked in my head, if the sister team for United Autosports wins the Rolex 24, does the crew from the other sister team also get Rolexes, or is it just the one?
So, unfortunately, last year the 22 car did actually win the 24 hour. They won it off a technicality a week later because the winning car got DQ'd. They still did win it. So the short question to that is actually none of the crew members get Rolex watches anymore. They used to give crew members watches, but because crew members would take their watches,
I'm gonna write an angry email to Rolex.
I'm telling you,
bullshit.
Crew members used to sell their watches, and Rolex didn't like that because they were exclusive. And so, like, now only the drivers get their Rolex watches if they win. So.
Damn.
But you, the crew members have the option to purchase it. What was that?
What if the driver sells it? And is that still like
that's a whole other issue, I believe.
Come on, we all saw the F1 movie. Come on.
I didn't.
I haven't seen it yet, actually.
Nobody? Oh my god.
I was there when they filmed
a reference that no one got. Oh hell yeah. Yeah. I bet that was entertaining watching all those shenanigans.
It was cool.
Shit.
That's cool.
Huh.
Yeah, it was chaos. Cool. It was cool watching because they filmed it while we were doing the 24-hour race. So, the car that was liveried up that was actually racing, they took video of, but they had like the photo car, like the shoot car out there doing stuff like in between sessions that we were out there. So that was pretty cool.
Crazy.
It was pretty cool to see all that.
Huh. I guess one final...
You guys need to suffer through that movie too, so you can get my stinky reference about what he does with Rolex.
Is it on streaming services yet?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's bad, but watch it anyways.
I guess one final question that I have for you before we go is, are you like buddy buddy with any of the race car drivers? Like, do you talk to any of them, or is that like completely different world?
No, a lot of the drivers are still pretty friendly, because, you know, obviously you spend so much time around each other, like during testing and stuff, that you say hi to everybody. Like, all of our drivers are pretty nice. We all chatted up every once in a while. Like, I know, like, Paul, obviously he's on the 22 car, but I talk to Paul every once in a while. He's a cool dude.
Awesome. I miss his commentary.
Same with Dan.
He was so good.
He's awesome to talk
Clearly,
to and listen
he's
to.
He's still a great driver too, but yeah. I think Sky Sports fucked up by getting rid of him. He was so good.
Yeah. Nolan Siegel, IndyCar driver. I know him pretty well. He drove our P3, so he was kind of like the new kid on the block when he was in IMSA driving our P3, but he was super fast. So I know Nolan pretty well, dap him up. He's a cool kid. Bajoy Garg, he drives the P2, the inter-Europol car. He did the first season with us for the VP. He's the one that won the championship, so I keep close contact with him. He's cool. But yeah, you develop such a relationship with some of the drivers because you're around each other so long that even when they're on other teams or in other places, like, you still say what's up to them and go wave and say hi, and they're not shy to say hi back. So it's cool. It's a cool atmosphere.
That's awesome.
They're not like,
Yeah, exactly. It's not like
my
that.
My wrist made the loudest noise it ever made. Do you know Lightning McQueen?
Other than in the Miata series, no.
Dude, he races Spec Miata now?
He and Chick Hicks.
Wow.
They actually race each other.
God.
Nice.
Amazing.
That was funny.
Amazing.
Hell yeah, brother.
But but what about Rexy? What about Rexy and Spike?
Rexy and Spike. I race against Spike all the time. They are some of my, I will say as a competitor, they're some of the coolest cars that are out there. And because they really helped broaden the sport, you could say, because they were so relatable to the younger generation. You know what I mean? So it's cool.
I have
it's really
AO
cool.
Racing plushies. Like, just the marketing genius is amazing.
Yeah. The merch Crazy. Is very smart.
Yeah. Very smart. Hell yeah. I'm so excited to like go into watching the next race being like, I have talked to someone.
Like, I know that. I know that teams.
Guy. And like, I have exciting. Another reason to root for another team. Like, that's always exciting to me. Like, the more you get to know the stories, more you find yourself rooting for like half the flipping grid. And that's so cool. I love it. I love it. I'm stoked to root for you guys.
We can definitely say that the Flag Time community will be fully supporting the number two car and United Auto Sports for this year and future years. So
that's awesome.
Let's go.
That's
awesome.
So
justice for Phil.
Justice. Because we're getting a victory for sure. We're going for one.
Hell yeah. Well, before we go, is there anything that you want to plug, your social medias or anything other than anything like that?
I mean, if you want to follow me on Instagram, that's always a good place to start. If I post more content, decide to start a YouTube channel with all my stuff. That guy, what was it?
Purple MX5.
MX5. There you go. I just changed it so I can remember how I did it. There we go. Yeah. So if I start posting stuff, you know, I'll post links to a YouTube channel or stuff like that.
Yeah, we'll have all of those. We'll have all those links in the episode description. So you go check that out. That was this episode of the Flag Time Podcast. Thank you so much, Jacob, for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me. It was great.
Glad to finally get you on the show. And we'll go ahead and read all of our names of our Patreon members. Patreon.com/Flag Time Podcast is where you can see the video version of this episode. And we want to thank our premium members for their insane generosity. Rogue One, Forced User, Sports Cars of Suma, Spencer Delfo, Luna Cat Eye, MacDonald Borger, Devin Newby, Vubula, Ansel Fuji, Mopar 1966, Kyle Olson 25, Eli Hip, Mississippi King, JJ the Tech, Midwestern Metalhead 03, Sushi Sausage, Elysium Darkness, Police 428, Starset Moonrise, Nick Toomey, John Montague, Poop Butt 14, Chrysler Connection, Horsepower Geek, The Big Maple, Meep Butt in Japanese, Polyester 69, Big Blue Caddy, 2004 Volkswagen Polo, Dog Milk 53, Stirworks, Yeller Jeep, TJ Canute, Sassiest Spoon 69x3, Refamous, Bend Bikes for Beer, GY, exclamation Yeet, Astrid KH, Will Swartz, Love Mama, and Grant. Thank you so much for your generous contributions to this dumbass show.
Holy fuck, that was a lot of names.
That was a lot of names.
Whoa.
Wow, that was a lot of names.
Dude.
Fuck yeah.
Okay,
thank you guys.
But that one name, though. That one name.
That specific one he said, like, right halfway through was crazy. Isn't that crazy?
Blew my fucking mind.
Crazy.
That is the best name I have ever
I was
heard.
Crazy once.
Oh, God. Anyway, that was this episode of the Flag Time Podcast. We'll see you
Put
guys
me
next
in a
time.
Room.
Okay, bye.
I love a room.